Thanks for joining us today on CC and Doc Talk, where we talk about everything under the sun. You never know quite what you're going to get, but you'll always be entertained. Welcome to today's podcast, The Road to Early Retirement. And we are talking about this because woohoo!
Oh my gosh.
Doc retired last week.
Oh my goodness.
Oh my gosh.
It's magical already. I mean, I can already feel the weight of just that pressure of, checking in, having to make sure I'm on top of things, watching for the email. Every morning I'd grab my phone and check in. All right, what's the latest? What's happening today? Oh, I got a call. I have meetings at, 10, 10:30, 11, 12, 1, 3, 4, and then an evening meeting with the family. I would look at the week and have that anxiety. And all of a sudden I'm like, no, I don't even have to click on that link anymore.
Guess what? It's Sunday. Guess what?
I don't have to worry about tomorrow. I think the anxiety of Sunday nights, I truly feel like a weight has been lifted off, similar to when I graduated from college. When you're in college, you always think, okay, there's a report, there's a paper, there's something I have to be working on. And then all of a sudden when you graduate college, it's like, whew, that's gone. Well, guess what? Whew.
It's gone!
That's gone! Yay. And so it's so exciting.
You have been much more decompressed this weekend. Like I can just tell. I mean, I think there's going to be a transition period, and I think it's going to take you a good year to get over that corporatization that happened.
20 some years of building that anxiety.
Exactly. So today's conversation, we're going to give some tips about how we got to this place and how we got to this place so young, both of us being in our mid 50s. And we'll also talk a little bit about, what our lives were like pre-retirement so that, you understand why we were so anxious to get to this place a little earlier. This was always a plan for us. It was always part of the plan for us to retire early, and partly because you had a great example in your dad and stepmom retiring very early. Mm-hmm. I actually had a very opposite example. My dad literally worked until the day he died. And, his hobby was work, and he was essentially in many ways a workaholic. And so, I think my motivation was different from yours. I wanted to be able to have that freedom sooner. And you were...
Yeah, and my mom worked...
We're emulating your dad's example.
Yeah, my mom worked, long years.
Yeah.
And she's only been retired a few years, and so...
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And plus, the corporate world will just beat you up.
Totally.
Which is why
I got out of it many years ago and started my own company.
Yeah, you jumped almost 20 years ago from the corporate world. And... And you sell your soul to the corporate world. They own you. They own your schedule. And at least they did mine. There was creativity within the box, but you had to find that.
Yeah. And I think that that's, and I also think, there are so many people right now, especially since the pandemic, really reexamining their lives, their jobs, what's it worth to them, et cetera, et cetera. And yet there's still this whole other faction of people and pressure that are, wanting people to be back in the office because, apparently we haven't learned that people actually do work when they're at home and they don't have to be in the office to get work done. There's pressure for that. In your case, there was tremendous pressure to get back on the road again, back in front of clients, even though the virtual world has been actually fantastic for you in the work that you've done with families and clients over the last couple of years. And you've made it incredibly entertaining and very, very engaging, but there are still those people, those old school thinkers who are like, unless you're in the office, you're not working. And unless you're traveling, unless you're sitting in front of a client face to face, even if you have to have masks on, that somehow
that's more effective.
You're not. Yeah. That somehow you can't be effective. So that's one of the reasons why this timing was perfect. So talk a little bit about our timing and what, again, we've planned on this for a lot of years, but there were a couple of events that have occurred that have definitely impacted your timing.
Absolutely. The whole thing around the virtual environment is, you and I and even my team, whatever, we've been working remotely for many years. I mean, this is not new to us.
Right. You and I were creating sure the whole virtual programs before that was cool.
Yeah, we have. But, getting the whole world to know how to use Zoom and WebEx and Teams and all that was new. But that wasn't new to us to be in the virtual world. And so there is this perception that you have to be in the office, you know, and even people that are in the office that don't do much work in the office, at least they feel like they're at work. And, you know, that mind shift, well, a lot of people because of the pandemic have had to make that mind shift over to what does work really look like and what does that mean?
Right.
And how ineffective it is to spend that time on the road commuting when, you know, when you're working at home, that your commute is when you're brushing your teeth.
Right.
As your computer's firing up. So, right. You know, there's just some things that you can realize that you could be very effective in the virtual world. And you could see, you know, I mean, everybody's experienced it now, so I don't have to explain the benefits of it.
Right.
Except we were able to bring in very, you know, really cool entertainment and stuff for our families and hire magicians and Broadway singers and drag queens.
And yet the pressure to get back on the road
is still there.
So talk about that a little bit and how that impacted your decisioning and timing.
Yeah, as somebody who's been a road warrior for 24 years on the road, 1.1 million miles flown, all domestic.
Which
that's
is
a big
hard
difference.
To do, folks. That yeah. means she's on a plane like every other day.
Every other business day is what that means. And, you know, I think of my friend CT out of Minnesota, who she has flown, you know, more than 2 million miles flown. It's all international. And I think of that difference, right? The destroyer of all joy is comparison. So here I am proud. It's like, hey, I hit 1.5 million miles flown. You know, she's like done 2 million. And I was like, oh my gosh, but she did international, which is exponentially harder because, you know, when you can't get home on a Friday night when you're international, you're not getting home till Sunday.
Right.
You know, when I couldn't get home on a Friday night, I was getting home on Saturday. Right. Yeah. But so much of my career was on the road. On the road, on the road, on the road. You know, picking up a suitcase on the road, coming home, having dinner with friends on the road, you know, leaving again. Which that, I mean, there was benefit to that, right? You and
sure.
I had the benefit of then being able to travel
sure.
together. We became point whores.
Absolutely.
We were able to.
Back in the good old days, anyway, yeah. when points were really worth a lot more. Because we were both traveling. You traveled more
yeah.
than I did, but we were both traveling. And then sometimes we would travel together.
Yeah, and there was one time we ended up both in the same airport, and we didn't even know we were both going to be there for lunch, and we had lunch together. That was kind of fun. And so just...
There were a lot of perks from the travel, but truth be told, like most road warriors do it for 5 years.
The average length of time that somebody stays in a job that is on the road weekly is 5 years.
Yeah, and then they get burnt out or they move on.
Oh,
it's
like there's no way. You can't.
But you've been at it for a really, really long time.
Absolutely. I mean, that's why I think I knew the writing was on the wall. And then COVID hit, right? And then all of a sudden I go from being on the road, to boop, stop, not on the road. And I'm like, wow, this is the longest I've slept in one bed in years. This is the longest I've slept in my own bed in years. I'm liking it and I'm cooking and I'm cleaning and my luggage is collecting dust.
I like the cleaning.
Yeah.
And the luggage has become storage.
It is storage. Yeah, it's great storage, you know. And it's just such a relief. And I didn't realize what all that travel was doing to my central nervous system
right.
and how much chaos I was creating in my life. And all of a sudden to not be on the road, it was like,
yeah.
It was just like this stretched out helium balloon that just kind of deflated down into this nice little cozy.
Well, and as you've heard us say before, we're great at creating chaos in our own lives. So you add that layer of constant travel and in and out and then, you know, when you're only in for a brief time, all your friends want to see you and they want to spend time with you. So our quality time together was always very diminished. Even though we were together, sometimes we were always with other people because, you know, you were always trying to catch up from all the time that we'd been gone or, you know, we were
always filling the plate.
Yep.
And then
always.
Packing a bag and always. Doing laundry.
And I think that, you know, and obviously not everybody does that, but I think for us, that was part and parcel of our work because, you know, our work was social, our lives were social. You know, our work put us in situations where we basically were, you know, we were eating breakfast with clients, we were doing happy hour with clients, we were doing dinner with clients, and then when we weren't doing that and we were home, we were doing the same exact thing with friends. We created some really bad patterns. We have terrible work habits, which we're willing to admit.
We have really good work habits.
We have great work ethic. We have great work ethic. We have terrible work habits.
Okay, all right, yeah,
because,
I'll give you that one.
Because we don't know how to separate. And we don't have any boundaries sometimes. And you know, we sometimes overdo. Anyway,
And no matter what city we went to, then when you're done with your work stuff, then you hang out with friends and family because we had friends and family in all the cities that we
right.
went to. And so, you know, you're there.
We have friends in every port.
Yeah. We would then, you know, you always have to catch up with everybody.
Right.
So every night would be filled. Every every spare moment would be filled with getting together with people and going somewhere and then staying over a weekend.
Right.
I mean, and it was great. We got to live the life of millionaires in terms of our travel.
And we weren't.
And we weren't. from that standpoint, I guess that's the creativity within the box. That's what kind of kept us going, was having that type of experiences.
But yet,
it was exhausting.
It was. And I think, you know, I knew that I was exhausted when the pandemic hit. I don't know that you knew how exhausted you were. And so, you know, back to the whole idea of the pandemic and how it, I mean, we literally had seven trips booked into the year when the pandemic hit, and we basically canceled all those flights. But just that should tell you, you know, how heavy our travel was. And so all of a sudden the pandemic hit, and it was almost like a blessed relief for both of us. I mean, and certainly, you know, even now, you know, our friend circle, I still think people are like, what is wrong with you two? Because we haven't
come out of our bubble.
We haven't. And of course now with my diagnosis and immunocompromised status, we're still staying in the bubble. But I think prior to that, I mean, our friends were really like, are you two even the same people? Like, I remember at one point somebody said to me, I don't even really recognize you anymore. And they meant that from the, you know, you're not the same, you know, and it wasn't even just, you know, so much the extroversion, which actually you and I are both, we both are not entire extroverts like most people would assume. I'm actually quite the ambivert right in the middle, and you lean extrovert, but you're not full on extrovert either.
I like extrovert means I'm energized from the outside in, which means, but it doesn't always have to be people.
Right. Like you could go chop wood and be energized.
Well, that's what I'm going to be doing. My next startup is going to be an engine.
That's right.
On a wood splitter or a wood chipper.
Capital equipment budget. The new capital equipment budget is wood splitter and wood chipper. So anyway, my point is that, you know, the pandemic ended up being such a blessed relief for us. It really made us reevaluate everything. And at the time, we had more than one property. And at the time, we also were looking at building on a property. Yeah. And we ultimately made some really different decisions in regard to that, because we realized that building on that property was going to be incredibly expensive.
Yep.
Did we really want to have a house payment into retirement? You knew that at some point the writing would be on the wall and the pressure to get back on the road. And you kind of decided, I really think you decided within the first 6 months of the pandemic,
I'm like, I'm not getting back
that you weren't getting back on the road.
And so we had to figure it out. So that leads to, okay, so
let's
get into
decisions. Let's talk about the decision.
The decision. You know, the meaning of life is choices, right?
Right.
And so we've had to make some choices along the way.
Yeah.
And the planning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are probably three things that led us into the ability to retire early. And one is just looking at how investments, mm-hmm. and we'll talk about that. Another one would be just around smart money choices, mm-hmm. and being smart with your money. And one of the things that you were just referencing was even the willingness to move multiple times away from friends and family because of the right opportunities to set us up to retire.
Yeah, so the job opportunities, we were always willing to travel. We were always willing to move. We always had the golden handcuffs because we knew they were feeding the nest egg.
Yes.
But we also knew it was temporary. It was a means to an end.
Yeah. I mean, there were times I said, you know, all right, I'm going to sell my soul for this one for a while, and we're going to do this.
Yeah.
And because it's going to set us up to be able to retire.
Exactly.
So, I mean, but, you know, but it's still a 10-year commitment.
Right.
I mean, my PhD was a 10-year commitment.
Right.
These were 10-year commitments. They're big commitments.
Yeah. Decades don't go as fast as you know.
Yeah. But then they go.
Yeah.
So. And then the third thing, and of course, this is a choice that you and I had, was around children.
Yeah.
Not having children. I mean, children are just, you know, we call them, well, anyways, let's just tone this down a little.
You can
go sex trophies. Yeah. These sex trophies are just financial garbage disposals. I mean, just put your money right in there and turn it on, you know.
Well, and that's
so,
very
but
true.
Let's go back and talk about each of these three.
Okay. Yep.
All right. So investments.
Yep.
I don't know that you and I, even though we went to work for a bank, we knew to invest if a company offers a 401k.
We knew to do that.
Do that. And, you know, and if the company matches only up to 4% of your salary, then do the 4% because you're going to get 100% on that money. And it's pre-tax, so you won't even notice the difference out of your paycheck.
Yep.
And learning to maximize or get money into that 401k mm-hmm. early. What was key, and you and I both started that, and those grow.
I mean,
that's amazing how much they've grown.
They do, and it's kind of an out of sight, out of mind thing. I mean, you can manage your 401k. Usually, you can make some choices in regard to how those investments are made. But for the most part, it's an out of sight, out of mind. It goes in there, you don't think about it, and you know later on, you realize you've amassed, you know, quite a bit of money.
Yeah, And you can't touch it because it's all in a 401k. And never do a loan against it.
Never do a loan against your 401k.
Oh my God, that's terrible.
If you do that.
That's not smart money.
That it is not smart money because the tax implications of that.
Just the penalties, the interest. It's terrible. It's not good.
If you can avoid it, avoid it.
Yeah. Another thing is to do Roth IRAs.
Absolutely.
Because even though they're post-tax, they grow tax-free in the end. So absolutely. Maximizing a Roth.
Now, Roth IRA. is income dependent, so you can only do it up to a certain level of income. So do it while you can. If you start making big bucks, then you won't be able to invest in it. So if you're somebody right now is working your way up the ladder and you're not quite at that, you know, paramount of your income earning potential yet, invest in that Roth IRA. What's the current amount that you can invest about?
I don't know what ballpark. It is. But even 1,000 here, 1,000 there, 100 here, 100 there.
Yeah.
Put something in there.
Yeah.
And that makes a difference too. And then, you know, there's the traditional IRA. And then getting over into other investments, you know, that for us to go there, it took an advisor.
It did.
And, you know, the banks have them free available.
You just really need to find somebody that you trust. And you need to decide whether you're willing to have a fee-based sort of setup where you actually pay your advisor fees for, you know, certain transactions and the service. Or there's a lot of them that offer it for free. Again, just find somebody you trust and somebody who will help educate you on the process. Don't be afraid to learn about the financial stuff, even if you don't think that you have the aptitude for it. I mean, you and I both know I am like the least mathletic person in the world, but I can manage finances. Now, I couldn't do accounting. I mean, I can't do that, but I can certainly balance it. Well, I didn't do so well with balancing the checkbook. I'll admit that, but I can live to a budget. I can make a budget. I can, you know, and there's so many tools out there now. Oh my gosh, people have it so much better than we did coming up because there's an app for that.
Right. And this might lead into them. Well, okay. So smart money choices.
Yeah.
So number two.
And smart money choices. May I go back for one second?
Yeah.
Women in particular, and I know this is going to sound stereotypical, but we actually have data to back this up. Women in particular tend to avoid the financial piece unless they really come from that STEM mindset. So, you know, if you're a woman.
STEM meaning science, technology, engineering, and math.
Yeah. If you're a woman and you're hesitant to jump into the financial piece, at least
don't
dip a toe in and learn. And again, find an advisor that you trust, somebody that will help educate you, but do not be in the dark about finances. It's such a detriment to you to be in the dark about it. And if you're in a relationship, at least be aware of how the money is changing hands.
Yeah.
Amy and I have, and I'll just put in a plug. We wrote a book last summer, and it's called Courageous Money, Your Adventure Through Money National Park. And it's all about your relationship with money. And while Amy and I are not advisors, we're not financial advisors by any stretch. Amy is a wealth psychologist, works with the emotional side of money. So this book is all about the emotional side of money.
Yes.
And again, that whole idea that, you know, don't let money control you.
Or don't be afraid of it.
Don't be afraid of it. You've got to take charge. Take a little charge of your financial future.
Yeah. Women often associate words such as dread and fear and hate with finances, or you bring up the word money or the budget, where, you know, can money ever get to the emotions of joy and love? Well, sure they can, but that's a big stretch on the spectrum. But at least get out of the hate, dread, fear part of it by embracing being a little bit more comfortable with it, venturing into that space. You know, everybody should have a budget. It doesn't matter what size wealth you have. It doesn't matter what your income expenses are. Everybody should have a budget. And there's some easy tools out there. You need a budget, YNAB.
That's
an app out there.
Mm-hmm.
YNAB, you need a budget, mint.com. But it's just having an idea of what's flowing into the house and what's flowing out of the house.
Yeah.
You should know what it takes to live your lifestyle.
Absolutely.
You should absolutely know what it takes to live your lifestyle. Now, we use QuickBooks because we have a tax person that helps us, a wonderful person that we love dearly. And she has us doing QuickBooks. So, I mean, I download every credit card transaction. I pull reports. And we have an idea of what it costs to live our lifestyle. And of course, that is kind of shocking to me.
Right.
Because even what we spend on groceries, well, now that we're not eating out.
Well, but especially now, even with inflation. I mean,
and inflation, it's just shocking to me.
And we run a business. And so, you know, our methods are a little bit more sophisticated. But it doesn't have to be. I can remember when you and I used to track a budget on an Excel spreadsheet.
Well, right now I move it over to an Excel spreadsheet just so you and I know what we can do this.
I can remember in college writing a paper budget. You know, I can remember sitting down with pen and paper, you know, when I writing down, you know, the amount that I earned from my job while I was in college and the amount that my parents sent me to help live on each month, and then, you know, basically subtracting my expenses. It's really not.
It's actually,
it's not rocket surgery.
Right. Yeah. Here's the money coming in, ABC. Here's the money going out. You know, I mean, your roof, your food, your, you know, utilities.
Right.
And then, you know, those are your hard costs. And then what are your soft costs? What are your choices? Right. So, I mean, it's not that hard to put together a budget. Okay. Absolutely. So being smart about money.
Being smart about money. And I think, you know, part of that is not living in debt. You know, you and I worked.
Oh, I want to share a story about that.
Yeah, please. I was going to say, you and I worked really, really hard. Even, you know, both of us had some student loan debt. I had some debt, you know, coming out of college for some other reasons, and I'm sure you did too. And, you know, but we worked our butts off to get that paid off and gone. And even now, some of the choices we've made, like not having a mortgage. So, you know, we found a place to live that is cheaper, lower tax base, and allowed us to be able to get the most bang for our buck. And it's still an amazing place. We live on 111 acres.
Of course, we moved to the middle of nowhere to make it happen. But you know what? So did my dad and stepmom. They moved out to Tennessee. Again, they moved away from family and friends to be able to retire younger and make it work.
Absolutely.
And so those are tough choices to make.
Absolutely. So share your story about that.
Oh, the early retirement. Back when I was an HR director in the casino world, the director of finance, the CFO, he retired in his 40s, and then he was just working for fun. And I said, "What was the secret?" And I'll never forget. And he goes, "You pay for cash for things, and never carry your credit card over from month to month. You pay it off every month." And he said, "Here's why: because if you save up enough money to buy a car and pay cash for it, you've worked so hard to build up that money that when you go to buy the car, you're like, gosh, if I buy this car instead of that car, I can keep a few bucks still in the bank."
Yep.
As opposed to if you go and buy it on credit. So all of a sudden you go to buy it on credit and it's like, oh, I can afford, you know, whatever it is per month, you know, a few hundred, but now cars are like $700 a month.
Yep.
But for only another $50 a month, you can get the leather package. Well, if you pay cash for it, it's like, oh, and the leather package is another $1,600. It's like, you know, I can live with cloth seats for and keep that $1,600 in the bank. So,
as nice as leather seats seem, when you live in a cold climate, they're actually colder unless you got that seat heater, which costs you another $1,200.
And by the way, I had a little readjusting to do because I ended up with the cloth seats and I really wanted the leather seats. But now I'm actually very good with the cloth seats because they are warmer. But you spend differently when you pay cash for things because you've worked so hard and it takes years to build up enough cash to buy a car.
Especially these days.
Yeah. And then, you know, eventually getting a house paid off. I mean, it's a great goal to have, you know, the refinancing. I mean, the interest rates have been so low to be able to refinance over these last few years to get that and the benefit around it.
And if you're able to...
15-year mortgage versus a 30-year mortgage, I mean... Yeah. Again.
And if you're able to buy versus rent, I know not everybody can, but right now rents are so ridiculous, at least in Colorado, that, you know, you really almost, and housing costs are higher too, but in some cases with a lower interest rate for buying a home, you can almost get a house payment for the same price as you can rent. So, you know, it works toward giving yourself that.
Absolutely. So I just want to go back and finish my story around. Sure. So when his name was Joe, when Joe told me about paying cash for everything and don't have any debt, personal loan debt besides your mortgage, I took a look and I had, and this is back when I was married, I had over 60,000.
When you were married to Mr. B. It's the
Mr.
BC
B.
before
Mr. B.
CC.
Before CC.
Yeah.
And I had over 60,000 in personal debt. Car notes, my student loans, I had an ATV. And I took a look at all the stuff that accumulated to 60-some thousand in debt. And I was like, wow, okay, it's going to take me a long time to get out from underneath that. So anything that had, that I could sell, that had value, at least what the value or the loan was, I sold. So we had the, like a Toyota Maxima car, right? Sold that, paid off that loan. And then ended up selling another vehicle and paying off that note. Sold the ATV, paid off that note, still had the student loan debts. And then, you know, then took $700 or $1,500 and bought a junker car to drive for a while. I mean, and it was a junker car. And then it was a, then we bought a Bronco 2 for $1,500 and drove that for years.
I remember that old green truck and that old slide-in camper that went in it that y'all picked up for a bargain.
Yeah. Well, that didn't have leather seats either. Cause when you pay cash.
Did it even have a bed in the camper? I don't know.
I don't know. It had four wheels and an engine, right? And so,
but girl got a camp.
It took 10 years to get out from underneath that $60,000 in debt.
Yeah.
And
that was in the 90s.
And that was in the 90s.
Yeah.
And then it takes more time because then you have to build up enough cash to be able to write a check or pay cash for something. So it was a big turnaround period. And so anyway, I'll stop there.
No, actually, but I'm gonna piggyback off of that because so when it's interesting. So you operated that way, and then you know you get out of debt, and then you get divorced, and then 50% of everything you have goes away, if not more.
Half.
But here was the benefit. So when you and I came to our relationship, neither of us had any debt. So
we had to pay off everything at the very end to get on the divorce.
So even though we'd both been divorced, even though we'd both been divorced and we had to, you know, give up half of everything we had, we still were starting in a better place than most people because we had no debt and we had both had good incomes. And so therefore we were at a great starting place as a couple. And I just think that was so valuable for us that we had we had both operated that way separately. So then that's the other thing about the whole shared values. You know, we're coming right back to that whole shared values thing. You and I both had the value of not living in debt. And so even though both of us can be spenders, we had also come from a place where we knew how to save and we knew how to scrimp and we knew how to whatever. So we were able to function really well as a couple in that partnership because we both had that same value of, you know, wanting to be able to spend, but also knowing that we needed to save and choosing not to live in debt. It was huge.
Yeah.
It was huge.
So that then translated to, again, this is about smart money decisions, right? How we then traveled.
Right.
So when we, you know, we still wanted to do vacations, but you know, traveling is expensive.
And we're cheap.
We are very cheap.
We have great. We have champagne taste, but we're cheap at the same time. So
we would like go to places, and rent a vehicle like a town and country van, and bring a sleeping bag and a pillow, and our baggage would be our camping gear, and we would camp, and we would just bring a cooler with or pick up one for cheap, and just have some food. And then eating dinners out is more expensive than eating lunch or breakfast.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if we were out camping and doing cheap vacations, we would, you know, always, you know, not do dinners out. And
we'd go eat a big breakfast, or maybe we'd hit a buffet or something.
A huge lunch. And
which, you know, unfortunately COVID has ruined me for buffets. I don't think I can ever eat at another buffet again for as long as I live. Just the thought of the germs is horrifying. But back then, you know, and Doc is a big eater. I mean, big eater. So we would go out to a buffet and like load up.
Oh, load up. Yeah. The difference between the lunch buffet and the dinner buffet, and it's the same buffet, is double.
Absolutely.
So being smart there and then not having to pay accommodations, and we would find ways to be able to, you know, campgrounds and parking lots and the various places that we would find.
Boondocking. We did a lot of boondocking.
Safe places to sleep.
And for free. In case you're not familiar with the term.
Yeah. And so we were really smart about how we traveled. The other thing we did is we didn't do gifts.
Right.
So, I know that one seems really weird to people because...
But most people buy what they want for themselves anyway.
Right, there's no delayed gratification, right?
Right. You get what you want when you need it.
So if you have a household that wants to travel, take a look at what are you doing around gifts. Because if you don't do gifts, I mean, by no gifts means no birthday, no Christmas, or no holidays, and no anniversary.
And this, of course, does not apply if you have young children and Santa has to visit. So keep
but
that
at
in mind.
But
at some point, when kids get older,
you know, if they get to help plan the trip, it's like, okay, next year we're going to go down to Hawaii or Mexico, and for your birthday, you get to choose an activity of what you're going to do while you're there, and they can choose go swimming with the dolphins.
Right.
I mean, you know, so now you're going to spend that money anyway on swimming with the dolphins. You don't have to do it right then, and they get to be a part of researching and finding what they want to do. Give them a budget.
And then you build memories and stories, which goes back to the whole idea of, back to courageous money and all about the experience and the relationship with money.
So you and I did one trip somewhere in the world every year, and we're 20 years together now. So we've now been to 20 amazing, fabulous places that we're now not going to do in retirement because we've done them.
Right. And actually,
20 other ones.
And actually, we've been to a few more. And again, you know, our work lives afforded us a lot of points and things like that. So we were able to use points to a lot of times. And
but Airbnb didn't exist back then. It's so cheap. You can make it happen.
There are ways you can do it on the cheap, for sure. And I do want to go back for 1 second when the idea that, you know, you and I didn't have the financial piece to argue about, you know, so many couples, you know, argue about sex, kids, and money. Yep. And we never had to have that we never had that friction around finances because we just approached things very similarly. So again, shared values, right?
Well, when you don't have any of the three, then you don't argue about them. So, yeah, it is. Yeah, that's what couples argue about. Well, and coming to a relationship with, if there's inequitability or fiscal inequals, fiscal diversity, coming in, then you figure out your strategy of what works for you. But everybody needs to have some sort of, I call it skin in the game. It's a terrible analogy, but, you know, contribution.
Right.
They need to be a part of it.
Well, there needs to be a what's in it for me, too,
yeah.
Right?
And so, you know, I'm going to finish up. Yeah, what's in it for me? But they need to... You know, no freeloading here.
So let's talk about that because there are a ton of kids.
I want to wrap up? The other thing about smart choices is not buying new vehicles.
Oh, yeah.
They're a terrible waste of money because as soon as you drive it off the lot, it's only worth half of what you just paid for it. And now if you get a loan on it, you're upside down and you never want to be upside down on a vehicle. So
and I'm gonna put a caveat in there and an unless because, and it's going to sound very hypocritical. You and I actually bought our last two vehicles new. However, my vehicle that I sold before I bought it was already 16 years old. And the one that I bought new is now 11 years old. So I would say the only caveat to that is if you're willing to keep your car for 7 to 10 years or longer, then you can buy new.
Yeah, at least that.
Because we keep our car. We actually have had more houses than we've had cars.
Yeah, we burn through houses faster than we burn through cars.
Right.
Well, and that's interesting because when we did buy our last round of vehicles, we traded in vehicles that were paid off.
Right.
So we didn't have to do that much outlay in cash. And now that's we're 12 years later and we both still have our vehicles and they have less than 50,000 miles on them each. So
once again, living not in debt is the biggest thing.
But it was a really proud moment in our lives that we saved up to buy a boat.
Oh, yes. A used Mastercraft water ski boat. And if you're not in the water ski world, used water ski boats are really freaking expensive.
But it was really exciting to write a check for it.
It totally was.
And the same with, we saved for 10 years to buy a camper.
Right.
Right? And again, we didn't buy a new camper. We bought one that was 6 years old.
Yep.
But it had only 20,000 miles on it, blah, blah, blah.
But our camper van, hashtag no Dick Van Dyke, is the bomb. It's the best camper we've ever had.
Call it our bubble.
Yes.
Love our bubble.
Yeah.
So all right. So let's go forward then.
One other place that I really want to go is this whole idea. So it's been so funny to me that ever since we started talking about retirement and now that it's happened, everybody is like, what's your plan? You got to have a plan. and or they're like, well, you know, if something happens financially, could you go back and consult? And I'm like,
this is just a phase for you. I'm sure you're going to find something else to do.
And somebody's like, well, don't get rid of your business suits yet. You know, you might still need those, as if anybody's worn one of those in the last 2 years. And then, there's just so much. I think I'm going to say it's transference. I think, you know, first of all, and then the other one is, gosh, you're really young to retire. You know, it's almost like an insult that we've got. And I'm thinking, this should be a badge of freaking honor because we've worked our asses off to get here. And the other one is, oh, you're so lucky to be able to do that. And while I agree we're very blessed, I believe being blessed and being luck are two different things.
Luck is where opportunity and preparation come together.
Absolutely. And while yes, we have been blessed, We have worked our asses off. It's not just luck.
And we've made some very strategic choices along the way.
And some difficult ones. And we may have to again, because now we will be living on a much lower budget.
In the middle of nowhere.
Right. But we like living in the middle of the nowhere, quite frankly. So you were going to say, something about the whole idea of, you know, everybody asking you, you know, what's your plan? Plans become a four letter word for you now.
Plan is a four letter word for me. I don't like it. I don't want to plan anything. My life has been planned for me so far in advance. I mean, it was not uncommon that my schedule would be booked out a year in advance with commitments for travel and family meetings and stuff that I used to facilitate. And so to not have it booked out that far is just a blessing. And I need to decompress. My central nervous system needs to just calm the fuck down.
I know, because you got to be able to meditate, which it's really challenging for you based on one of our last podcasts, you know?
Yeah, no, I literally just need to not have anything on the horizon. You ask me each day, what do you want to do today? And I got a blank slate. Tabula rasa, whatever, however you want. Blank slate. I don't even want to think about what needs to be done today. I want it to just be blank for a while and just live in the moment. I want to notice. It's like, oh my gosh, look at that beautiful blue sky. Oh, look at the snow is melting. I mean, I just want to be in the moment versus now going, oh, because guess what? I could immediately go to, okay, I need to be working on my taxes. I need to do this. Oh, I have to check on that. I haven't paid this, you know.
But that's the same thing you've been doing for the last, you know.
Those things will happen.
Right.
I know they will. But right. I don't have to all of a sudden have this like anxiety feeling that I have to.
Right. And again,
I want to.
You and I have some really, really big adjustments to make on work-life balance. Yeah. And so, you know, and here's the thing. Are we still going to work? Probably. We can't seem to escape it because we still have, you know,
something
clients.
Something will be there. Right. I'll probably do something with Courageous Money. I love the book that we wrote. I love that whole area of helping people understand their relationship with money.
And we still have executive coaching clients through Inside Out Discovery.
Absolutely.
But they're few and far between. I mean, we're very much handpicking, you know, the things that we do these days and the work that we do. So, you know, but I think the point is just that, you know, but for me, the very word retirement is its definition. And so therefore, you know, when somebody's retiring, you go, you know,
retire is to rest.
Yes.
Right. And
right.
So it's not that I want to, like, you know, I don't have one foot in the grave, but I do want to rest for a little bit.
Right.
And so,
and then we'll figure it out. And here's the thing, like not having the fear that we may not have enough, because we have a pretty good gap. It's a 10 to 12 year gap between. We'll have to pay healthcare costs, which is what prevented us from retiring before this, because.
Yeah, my advisor kept saying, no, your nest egg is not ready to hatch yet. Your nest egg is not ready to hatch yet. And I
Thank
kept
you,
hanging
Matt.
In there.
Thank you, Matt.
Hanging
you.
In there. Hanging in there. I think my whole life has just been hanging in there, you know, with
my fucking going.
Just keep fucking going. You know, when I was, you know, doing all those years of college, and working full time, paid my own education.
Yeah.
Just keep going.
Yep.
Just keep going. And at the end here, just keep going. Yep. Just keep going. And, you know, it's the treadmill. I mean, and you're on the treadmill, and sometimes you have to stay on the treadmill.
Absolutely. And the other thing that comes to mind is, you know, like many people, we are currently dealing with a life falls event in Courageous Money or you know, an illness. So, you know, my cancer diagnosis. And so that definitely ups the ante in terms of anxiety around the finances and things like that. I mean, certainly, you know, cancer treatment is not cheap. We're blessed to have quality healthcare through your employer, and we're able to have COBRA, and eventually we'll have to figure that out. But you know that we're blessed to have healthcare coverage. But it, you know, it does up the ante a little bit in terms of anxiety. But I think that's what, you know, everybody deals with that. And it's funny because, you know, we always used to run the Monte Carlo, which is what they do to tell you whether you can actually retire and at what age.
Yeah.
And I always said it accounts for everything except for catastrophic events or, you know, illness. And
you can have that in there.
And here we are dealing with that. And yet we're not terribly afraid. You know, we know that
we can make money.
We can make money if we need to.
When we need to.
Right.
If we need to, you know.
And I think that's what I want to say to everybody is that you can make money if you need to.
There's
and you
a million
don't,
ways to make a buck.
That's right. And you don't have to work for somebody else to do it. You don't have to. Or, you know, maybe you do just to get healthcare benefits.
What was that Bette Midler statement that there's a...
life is a buffet and...
Life is a pay and a million people are starving to death.
Yeah.
So...
That's something we just botched.
But anyway, that's right.
Anyway, so
life
I just
is a buffet and everybody's starving to death.
I just wanted to make that point. I think sometimes our self talk, your self talk comes in and it's like, oh, you can't do that. You can't do that.
But
you can.
Beliefs, yeah.
You totally can. Yeah. You can do anything, and absolutely anything that you put your mind to. And in our case, it's early retirement. Woohoo! So hey, let's go enjoy a hike or something, because you don't have to.
Well, I want to come back, swing back around to the kids thing one last time.
Oh, okay? Yes, please, yes.
We're just about shared finances, shared money,
and we do realize that it's a little too late for some of you not to have kids because you've already got them.
Well, because they're sex trophies, so you might as well enjoy your trophy, right? And so many people. I mean, you know, you really there's so much joy in kids. You know, they are a financial drain, and yet other people, if you're wondering if it's just the societal pressure that you have to have kids, you don't. You know, I love my aunt and uncle that are up 80s, and they didn't have kids, and they said it was the best choice they ever made not to. And you know, you and I, when we were married to men, chose not to have kids.
Well, and that was a tough choice, because having grown up in the Midwest, like you and I both did, I mean, that's what you did. You know, you got married, you had kids, and I, you know, there was some pressure from my ex-husband.
A cultural
family.
Thing. Oh, when are you going to have kids? You know,
right? There was some pressure.
I think we should change that. When are you going to retire?
Mm-hmm. Instead of when are you having kids? When are you going to retire?
When are you going to retire?
There was some pressure, I think, from my ex-husband's family about having kids, and you know, I wasn't gonna bring kids.
I still
into
have
that
pressure from my dad.
Right. I know. Amy's dad would still have liked it if we'd had kids. But we came to that with a conscious choice. But I guess my point is, you know, even married, you know, we opted to not do that. And I always thought it was great, because when we came to this relationship and we became quote lesbians, end quote, you know, we say gay, by the way.
Gay.
I always thought that was a great excuse. I'm like, hey, I'm a lesbian, I don't have to have kids. But now there's all these wonderful young lesbians having children, and I'm like, I always thought it was a great excuse not to have them. But anyway,
let's go to the financial piece.
Let's go to the financial piece of that.
So really, one of the things that we do in financial education for families is financial wellness is helping parents and their kids learn to teach the kids about saving, spending, and sharing. And
the value of money,
right. And helping them maybe divide their allowance into those three again. You know, saving, spending, sharing, and this is how you save, and teach them to maybe invest that early or just save it, and then here's how you spend
getting
an allowance, and then dividing that into thirds,
right.
And this is how you spend, but getting it so that they then are spending their own money sooner than later. So if you are giving that allowance, then as they get older, then they have to buy that expensive pair of tennis shoes that they want.
Right.
And all of a sudden they're realizing,
or at least contribute. Like, you know, we know a lot of people who did half and half. Like, if you save half, I'll pay the other half.
Right. Or if they want that laptop, you can buy the cheaper HP or the Apple.
Right.
So it teaches them to make choices, right? Because they have that skin in the game. They have some vested ownership because it's their money.
And then when they come to live with you when they're 30 and you ask them to pay rent to help, then they're not shocked by that.
Yeah. Right. Well, we had the rule in our family was I could live under the roof of the house without paying rent as long as I was in school full time. So that's why I stayed in school for 10 years.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
So, but you know, contributing. And if there are people living in your house, they need to contribute. I mean, we had roommates, and you know what? Here's the jar. Everybody puts money in for groceries, and then this is what we buy groceries from. Yep. When the jar is empty, everybody puts equal amounts in.
Once the people in the household are adults, and I'm going to say 18 and up. Once the people in the household are 18 and up, and again, especially
if they're not in school full time.
If they're not in school,
they need to be contributing.
They need to become adults.
Yep.
Even if it's just a little bit here and there.
The financial piece of things, they need to become adults. They need to launch. The best thing you could do is to help your kids launch. Give them wings.
Yeah. The bank o' mom and dad is closed.
Bank o' mom and dad. And look at where's the point of pain. Well, if there's no point of pain on the kids, because of course they can hang out at the house all the time and not pay anything and eat all the food there. There's no point of pain on the kids.
Right.
Why are they going to do anything different?
Right.
It has to come from the parents.
Yeah.
And the parents have to teach these things.
But it's hard.
So, but also college. You know, the parents, you know, it's okay that the kids in college, it's a noble thing to do, and college is so expensive to want to, you know, pay your kids college. But pay a portion of it. Have the kids pay a little bit of it, and or have scholarships.
Yeah.
You know, there's again, choices. There's different avenues. There's more than one way to do the right thing.
And not every kid wants to go to college, and that's fine, but there are still options.
But they still then have to contribute.
Right, there are still ways to contribute.
Well, even as a youngster, right, put up a chores chart, and you can get a buck for every time you wash the car, or 50 cents every load of laundry that you do. You know, put it so that they learn how to earn money too, to put in their three save, spend, share.
So, some kids would be miserably broke, and others will be like raking it all in.
Absolutely. But then it gives you a chance to teach them the money lessons along the way.
Absolutely.
So anyway, you know, again, we're the experts on raising kids because...
Because we have none.
But this is what I've been doing for the last 20 years is financial education for families.
We've been working with families for a lot of years.
And I learned a lot of these tricks from the families.
Absolutely. And they really do know a lot about how to get those.
So once again, I think we were very serious in our conversation here. And what I do want to say is, oh my God, I love retirement already. Holy cow. And I cannot believe that I finally crossed the finish line.
Yay!
At least that finish line. And I don't know what I'm going to do, so don't ask me, but I am going to be very busy doing nothing. I've said this multiple times. I'm going to be very busy doing nothing. I'm just looking forward to whatever is there. I did the same thing after I graduated with my doctorate. I knew getting the degree would make a difference, but I didn't know what it would be. I know that being retired is going to make a difference, and I don't know what it's going to be. But I'm going through that door.
But thank goodness you don't have to be a part of the whole corporate grind anymore. And so here's the thing. We're now going to go out and have some fun today. But I want to
close. It's Sunday night. I'm going to stay up late and watch movies
tonight. Woohoo! Hey,
because it's no longer a school night.
I'll be really happy with that. So I just want to ask you before we close, like, what made you stay? And you could do this briefly, but what made you stay? Like, what gave you the tenacity to keep fucking going? And then what is your one word of joy or whatever now that you're done?
Let me just go with the one.
25 plus years in the corporate world.
Oh, let me just answer that one first. My top value is freedom. And I feel like my value of freedom has been kind of under a rock for a while, or at least, you know, tied to some...
More like under a boulder,
or
cement. Underwater.
Although I had a lot of freedom within the box, so that meant that describes my work world. What kept me going is I did have freedom within the box.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I was able to, you know, again, that the travel piece of it and what I was able to create in terms of the workshops and the work I did with the families and eating at these amazing restaurants and staying at these amazing places. The Calistoga Ranch.
Yeah, that place was amazing.
And then you mentioned one.
Oh, the Ritz-Carlton.
The Ritz-Carlton in Maui. Yeah. I mean, you know.
Business travel has its perks, but it also has its downside.
So, I mean, the luxury side of the work that I got to experience kept me going. Of course, the families, the clients, the coworkers, the colleagues kept me going. It was the corporate politics, the corporate dogma, some certain leaders that it's just like, you know, you've got to be kidding me. It's kind of like, it's time for me to go.
And that exists everywhere. And I have...
Shit floats. Oh, that's a different topic.
We always said we were going to write a book called Shit Floats.
How do certain... The corporate world and certain leaders that make it to the top, we call it Shit Floats.
So one other thing, you know, is there a little fear and trepidation that next month there's not a regular paycheck coming in?
Oh, I'm already freaking out about that.
Of course. But it's still worth it.
We're going to totally figure it out.
We'll figure it out. Yeah. And you will too. So I think that's the key.
Live bold.
Live bold. Live
that's bold. What we're going to do.
Live bold and have a fabulous day.
Well, and I didn't want it to be a cancer diagnosis that got me to wake up call to say, I'm not going to do this anymore. But it was just confirmation that it's the right thing to do.
Right.
And so we're going to live bold.
Absolutely. Absolutely. On that, everyone.
Love and hugs to everyone.
Have a fabulous day.
Thanks for tuning in to Cece and Doc Talk. We'd love for you to follow us on social media at CC and Doc. That's CCNDOC. And you can visit our website at ccanddoc.com. We also take monthly donations to support this broadcast if you're so inclined. We'd love to hear your comments, suggestions, and questions, and we'll do our best to respond. Thanks, and have a fantabulous day.